Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Fine. 415 says, my jersey for tonight is number 89 and my last name is Sweep. That's pretty good. Brett Gardner has the best one. Gardner. There's always one or two schmucks, one or two Schmendricks on every team that they just don't want any part of it. I would actually like to see someone write on the back, this is dumb, if they don't like it. I would have mad respect for that. You know, would that work? Would they let it happen? They probably wouldn't let it happen. I knew a guy in high school who was very smug, and he applied to Harvard. And, of course, Ivy League, you had to meet someone, an alum, from in person, and then you had to fill out this huge essay. And I forgot what the essay topic was, but it had to be 3 pages. And he just wrote, this is a stupid idea for an essay. I'm not even going to waste my time. And he got accepted. You're just the smug type of jerk we're looking for here in Cambridge. No offense if he went to Harvard. I'm just jealous. Cal Ultimate alumni here. Love the fact you mentioned it. Keep it up, Rick. That's Philip in Dublin. I just mentioned I thought it was dumb, and it's not. It's actually pretty cool, and it's pretty hard. Chappie is a movie about a gangsta robot, not a British happy Chappie. I'm not getting into what – listen, he's Chappie because his name is Chapman, obviously. That's the only reason that he's Chappie, right? That's the only reason that he's Chappie. And so that's just why – I figured that you really can't. It's just when I hear, Chappie, are you all right? Can I get you some more? Please, sir, may I have some more? All right, 888-957-9570. Ryan is out in the crick. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good. What's up, man?
As the artist formerly known as Brian from Pleasanton, if I were one of the players, I'd get the perfect thing for the back of the jersey. I'd simply put, this space for rent.
That's not bad.
Yeah, billboard type. All right, take care.
All right, he's out. He's in, he's out. That's Ryan. I probably would have had my nickname if they wouldn't let me have the poo emoji, because that's just being sassy. I would have to be serious and put my nickname. My nickname when I was playing in South America was El Rey del Mundo. I don't know what that means. But up here, it was Count Pimpula. So I probably would have gone with one of those. The 650 says, how about trying it too hard? Or trying too hard? I get it. Actually, you have T-O, trying it too hard. I got it. 510 says they removed a section of the colon and reattached the two sections. That's colon surgery. People, I mean, Joe Torre had that. My grandfather had that. That happens a lot. They said they replaced the colon. So, I don't know. They always say there's 4 miles of tubing in your stomach. I don't know how it could be 4 miles, but that's there. The 541 hates the fact that I say Neptune for his area code. He said, try to explore sometime. It's called the internet. Well, you just guaranteed I'm going to call the 541 Neptune forever. 209 says, how do you feel about people who give themselves nicknames? Well, they never stick. They don't. And Greg Papa told the story about when Jerry Porter scuppered Art Shell. As soon as he got the job back, he was rude to Fred Biletnikoff. He said he didn't care about the team. He only cared about his stats. His quote, not a fan of Jerry Porter. But when he came in as a rook out of Vatek, West Virginia, I think it was West Virginia. But anyways, he came in as a rook. Greg Papa told the story that they were at camp, and he said to him, look, when you're doing the games, whenever I make a catch, I want you to say another catch by the icon. And then Gruden heard this and he's like, what? You see that guy over there? His name's Tim Brown. You know how many Pro Bowls he's been to? See that guy over there? Jerry Rice. You know how many rings he's had? And you want to be known as the icon? Huh? 925 says, how about Hot Piscotti? Eh, I guess that works. Look, if his nickname's Momo, his nickname is Momo. Remember it went to Indian guides as a kid, and we all got Native American names, which are always pretty cool, you know, like Wolf Howling at Moon or something. It's kind of the traditional, stereotypical stuff. But I never really liked mine. My name they gave me was Retreating Skunk on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle.
All right, thank you so much. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you on 95.7 The Game. Let's turn our attention a little bit back to the NFL. And joining us is Rob Lauder, covers the 49ers for Niners Nation, SB Nation, hosts the Blue Wire Pods, Striking Gold. He's all over it. And, Rob, let's just start off with the Jimmy G thing. We've got some quotes from Chris Mortensen on the Ryan Russillo podcast. Also, we had him on Jolo and Dibs yesterday, that there might be some sort of friction over fractious issues with Jimmy, and maybe they got to dumb down the playbook and, you know, five interceptions in practice and all these things I don't care about. I mean, you call me naive. I think he's going to be fine. I don't think anything's going on here. I think we just need a headline or two. What do you think?
I think that's fair. And I think it's funny, too, that the headlines start coming out about him being horrible at practice after he has a horrible practice. it's not his first practice with the Niners. This is my second training camp watching Jimmy Garoppolo, and I just happened to not be there for that practice. But every other practice, he's looked pretty good. I mean, every quarterback throws interceptions in training camp. They're not necessarily something worth acting over. And every quarterback, you know, has a bad preseason game, especially if you're taking it from a huge sample size to one that's, you know, of all these quarterbacks coming back from a torn ACL and playing their first games in over a year. I think it's okay for these guys to, you know, shake a little rust off, play a little bad. It happens. And I don't think that it's worth kind of blowing it up that far. I just, you know, I think if Jimmy Garoppolo would have came out, you know, maybe last year's training camp and was playing rough, and then like, oh yeah, he's always had rough training camps. He's more of a game guy or whatever. I would have made more sense hearing it then. But the funny part is it took one bad practice and everybody reporting that, and then a bad training camp debut after all these circumstances for them to talk about it, which makes me kind of, maybe I'm not really buying it, especially considering I've been watching the guy. He's not a bad practice quarterback.
Yeah, and whatever version of the playbook he had at the end of 2017, he won five games. I hate the fact when people try to act like that wasn't anything. It was garbage time. The Niners had nothing to lose. And, I mean, the Jags had one of the best defenses in football. They were fighting for their position in the playoffs. You can't just throw five NFL wins out the window. And for people who try to belittle that, I mean, it's sort of like saying, well, if you look at Mike Trout, this year against Houston in seven games, he's batting 162. So obviously, against good teams, a rival, he can't step it up. Mike Trout actually sucks. I mean, it's just you can bend it any way you want.
Right, exactly. And you can do that to any quarterback. And obviously, depending on who you do that to, it's going to sound funny. But it's just not worth blowing it up. It's always worth taking a sample size at its whole. I always laugh, like, when you talk about, and it happens all the time throughout the NFL, it could be a wide receiver. You say, oh, this guy had, you know, 150 yards and two touchdowns. And they're like, oh, but 80 of those yards and one of those touchdowns came on one play. And I just kind of pause. I'm like, so do they not count because they made a big play? It's the same thing going into the season. Like, it's a guy's sample size as a whole. If the guy can come in here and look like that through five games with a super limited sample size, or, you know, and even maybe a limited playbook, then he's going to be able to look like that as he grasps the bigger picture. So it's a little too much too fast. If Jimmy Garoppolo starts off the regular season and just can't get above 500, and you know he's matching every touchdown with an interception type of deal, or maybe even negative, then I think we could start having the conversation. But right now, the guy's trying to return from a pretty gruesome injury, and I think a lot of people try and downplay that for a quarterback. He's just a quarterback. What it's just an ACL. Yeah, well, every single one of their throws involves their legs, at least if they're throwing correctly. So I just think it's, definitely a pump the brakes. Hold on, let's get into the regular season. Let's look at some real stuff here, and we'll see what's going on.
Another thing to keep in mind is, and I've seen it, I'm sure you have too, in camp, he's got a lot of new guys there, and Deebo Samuel and Hurd got drafted, and you hasn't had a lot of time with a lot of the guys who were even there. He had a little bit of a rapport with Taylor, and he got hurt, so... In camp, you might want to see, what a wide receiver is going to do on a route and if he'll go up for a ball. And then B, it's camp. Who cares? You think, I think I can squeeze this in the needle. I can thread it here. And you make these throws that you would never make in a game.
Right. And the best example I can come up for that, and it was funny because I ended up actually feeling bad about it. I was the guy that actually filmed the Richard Sherman getting burned by Marquise Goodwin video last year. I mean, I think a few other people filmed it, but mine was just to happen the one that got a lot of traction and blew up. And Richard Sherman was the most least affected by it or least concerned with it guys on the field. He's like, it's practice. We're going to try different stuff. We're going to, we do stuff out there so we can get burned in practice, and the quarterback's perspective, they're going to try throws out there that they're not going to try in a game just to see if they can pull them off, to your point. So, it's the same thing. Everybody was overreacting to the fact that Richard Sherman got burned by an Olympic sprinter on his first rep back from a torn Achilles. Well, it's the same thing from Jimmy Garoppolo. He went up against a good defensive front in his first live reps back from a torn ACL, and it's not worth getting crazy about.
In time immemorial in sports, whenever somebody who looks like he might be in jeopardy, people will call for the backup. I mean, people are actually wanting an undrafted guy, Nick Mullins, who I have a lot of admiration for where he got. And, he looked like a Hall of Famer against the Raiders last year when the Raiders had no interest in that game. It was humiliating to be a Raider fan that night. But Garoppolo, the only way he doesn't start week one is if both his legs are broken. This whole Mullins can't. I mean, Mullins is going to be lucky to be second string. He's not going to start.
No, not at all. Not even close. And that is totally everybody loves to overreact to preseason, especially guys who are getting snaps later in the game, who are competing against second and third string players. And of course, if the guy's a halfway decent player, he's going to look good in those circumstances. And yes, you're also working with your own second and third string talent, but that's usually just not how it works, especially not on an offense versus defense scenario. So it's, the best thing I can say, at least for myself, is I've been watching all three of them practice all summer against the 49ers defense, who seems pretty game so far. They don't seem like a slouch in any way. And none of them have given me anything to overreact to in any way, either way. Whether it's Nick Mullins being amazing or Jimmy Garoppolo being horrible, everything I've seen kind of represents the overall feeling that Jimmy Garoppolo is pretty good. Nick Mullins is also good for an undrafted free agent guy. He's a good backup. So those things can just stay that way. And you know what I mean? Like I said, once we get into the regular season and things really start to become what they are, you got a 5-game sample size or what have you, then it's time to start, talking about whatever it is. But right now it's just like, sheesh. It's a little crazy. It's unique, if that's one way to put it.
Well, as in lockstep as we are in this whole thing with Garoppolo, on the other hand, part of me thinks, well, Chris Mortensen doesn't make stuff up. Is there smoke? Is there a fire? I mean, you raise one eyebrow a little bit. I mean, have you seen anything that you've heard of?
Not really. I mean, the guy is definitely a gunslinger in the fact that, and you can go back and watch his 2017 games where he won all five of them, and there are at least half a dozen to maybe even a dozen throws that you say, whoa, like that was either an amazing throw or it was just entirely reckless. And there's a lot of that in playing quarterback, period. But I do believe that Jimmy Garoppolo is pretty fearless in a way that he will take throws that maybe he shouldn't. And those throws, at least right now, may not work out for him for a little bit of time until he builds a lot of confidence in his legs and he can really torque into those throws. and he can hit the windows that he was already hitting that we were wowing at already. So I think it's worth saying like he's one of the worst practice players ever. That seems like it kind of came out of nowhere. But I think right now, at least as he recovers from this torn ACL, he's going to try to make a lot of throws that he could make in the past that aren't going to have the same zip. And as we know in the NFL, it's just a matter of split seconds. And like I said, you can go back to 2017 and find those throws that he was making then that are going to be a little slower after the ACL. And I just think it's going to take some time before it can kind of get back to that. But I think just understanding what Garoppolo is important in the fact that he's a gunslinger and he's going to throw the stuff around. And I would think even his best season, whatever he turns out to be, he'll always be running around like a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. You know, whether that's 20-to-10, you know, 30-to-15, whatever it is, he'll always throw them because he's going to take throws that maybe other people wouldn't. And he's definitely not a play it safe type of guy.
The other thing is too, and just to wrap up Garoppolo right now with this, you know, these rumors that maybe Shanahan's not happy. The other reason I think it's not true is that Shanahan knows that Garoppolo is the guy and that the whole season is going to rest on him. Why in the hell would he try to undermine that with scuttlebutt? Why would he shoot himself in his foot by telling the guy, even if it's not directly, that I don't have confidence in you? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, and Shanahan is refreshingly so, in most occasions, a very, very honest guy. And he also seems very level-headed. And whenever, as media, when we would ask him about players after practice, when we've seen a player kind of, you know, develop, picking up some steam, and obviously a coach always wants to keep his players kind of on even keel, but he doesn't seem to overreact in good performances, and he doesn't seem to overreact about bad performances. So it's a matter of just kind of listening to what he's saying. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to have bad games, and Shanahan's going to know that. And I don't see him overreacting one way or the other. And Shanahan, going back to that, seems like somebody who, if anything, he's going to be cautious about paying somebody Garoppolo-type money. And if a guy with that offensive acumen was sold on a guy like Garoppolo that quickly, he saw what he needed to see to have confidence in him. And they're just going to be working through whatever normal bumps and bruises that come from playing an NFL quarterback that they have to.
You know, it's funny when I think about the McKinnon signing and people thought, well, that's a lot of money for a guy that's not a big name. But, you know, Kyle thought, geez, this guy, I can make him maybe a mini Roger Craig in the passing game and such a thrashing runner. And we didn't get to see any of it. He tore his ACL, as we know, and they had to patch it together. And Breida did a good job stepping in. Mostert, when he was healthy, they had, you know, Albert Morris. But they made sure that this wouldn't happen again, that if he went down, they'd have Tevin Coleman. Of course, Kyle knows him very well. They went to a Super Bowl together with the Falcons. McKinnon looked like he was ready to go, and now a little bit of a setback. And you hate these injuries that nag, 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 and you never get to 100%. Where is Jet right now?
You know, it's tough to say. I think he surprised a lot of people by coming out to practice without a brace. He looked ready to go. It's been, you know, almost a year, and that is a perfectly normal time frame for a torn ACL. But it was still a little surprising that he didn't have a brace, and he just seemed kind of laissez-faire about it. Like, it is what it is. I'm ready to roll. And I don't think that's any fault of his own. I think that, if anything, the new medical staff that the 49ers have brought on has shown that they're a little overly cautious, and they will take their time with a player. So for him to get out there, you know, and then show a little soreness, I don't think that's necessarily anything to worry about. I just think the 49ers know that they can take their time. And to your point, Shanahan was not hesitant at all to kind of show us how much Jet McKinnon meant to that playbook going into last season. And what somebody like Shanahan would say, I almost took it like it was maybe worse than he was saying it. Like, they pretty much, from what I took it, had to scrap like half the playbook when McKinnon was lost, because he just has a very versatile skill set that, while every one of the 49ers running backs is actually pretty good in the passing game, none of them are quite like McKinnon. And McKinnon can run routes better than a lot of receivers can. And I know that losing him caused Shanahan to drastically alter the playbook. And while they do have a lot of depth there now, still I still believe that none of them quite offer what McKinnon has. And it's tough to say where he is. I think the 49ers are probably going to be perfectly okay with I don't think they've made this decision yet, but I think if they start him on IR to start the year, and he'll be one of their designation to return guys, which are only allowed two, and we might not see him until maybe after the bye, which I believe is like week 4. which is, you know, an interesting time. That's four additional weeks for him to heal up. And it's just to have, be able to have those fresh legs and something that he didn't have last year. I asked him at the beginning of the year that, you know, what does it feel like to have four starting caliber running backs that have all proven to be pretty effective. And he was just, he was, you know, in bliss almost, you know? And so I think he knows that they can take their time with him and he will be back out whenever they want him to be back out, whether that's week five, week six, week seven, whatever it is. I think they know that they can afford to wait on him. That way, when they get him back, they've got him back. They don't have to worry about re-injury or, you know, the soreness that comes along with that or what have you.
Rick Tittle here with Rob Lauder. Rob Lauder with Niners Nation, SB Nation as well. A couple more questions here, 95.7 The Game. You know, it's very exciting to see some more weapons for Jimmy G. And you bring in Deebo Samuel. You bring in Jalen Hurd. You already have Pettis and Goodwin. It's too bad Taylor got hurt again. But it's funny, they don't have a number one receiver. I mean, they do have George Kittle, who's the best in the conference, but they don't have that Julio Jones. Not many teams do. But there are some guys that just plain won't get cut. You're not going to cut Samuel or Hurd, obviously. Pettis and Goodwin are a lock. But what about, do you carry six receivers? Who are the guys on the bubble, and who really need to put something on film tonight?
And this is one, because I've always been a receiver guy. I coach receivers. I'm a middle school teacher, and I coach wide receivers and DBs. So I'm always a little more locked into this group than I would be other groups, just because it's what I do. But they have some really, really tough decisions to make here. And going back to what you said, Marquise Goodwin is, I would say, a very, very strong possibility of making the roster. Preseason week one, he was the only receiver that didn't play, not for any injury or anything. He's a veteran guy. They know what they got. So I think he has a very strong chance of making it. He still offers something that no one else on that group does with the speed he has. So I think he's still very strong. You really got, at least before Trent Taylor got hurt, you had Jalen Hurd, Deebo Samuel, Dante Pettis, Marquise Goodwin, and Trent Taylor all seemed like locks to me. Trent Taylor was the 49ers' best receiver in camp, and it wasn't particularly close. I don't know if it was coming from New England and being used to those types of receivers, but Jimmy Garoppolo was all over him, especially in the red zone where you wouldn't necessarily expect him to. But Trent Taylor has that shiftiness where he could just get open, and all it took was a split second, and boom, another touchdown. So I consider him a lock, even with the foot fracture. I still think they want to use him, and they know what he can do. So it's really, you have Kendrick Bourne, an undrafted free agent, former undrafted free agent, who led the team in receiving yards last year. It wasn't a lot; it was just a little over 400. But he's proven that he can be effective. You know, I like to think of him as like a wide receiver 3.5. Like, he could, at any point, put him on the field, and you know you can rely on him. And you have Richie James, who offers a ton in the special teams. I think last week he averaged like over 30 yards per kick return, and one of them was like 45 yards. So he's really impressive. And when you get to the back end of that depth chart, it has to be a guy that can play on special teams. It has to be. Otherwise, you're kind of just burning a roster spot there. And then you have Jordan Matthews, who they brought in as a free agent guy. He's a little bit bigger than all their other receivers. He loves kind of making catches in contact, contested catches. And, you know, Shanahan has said some things where he seems like Jordan Matthews is going to make the roster. So I don't necessarily think they keep seven, because then you've got what I expect to be four running backs, maybe five, when McKinnon comes back, if you include Juszczyk. So it's crazy. I mean, you have Richie James, Kendrick Bourne, and Jordan Matthews all competing for what I feel is one spot. And I don't necessarily feel like they're going to put Trent Taylor on any type of reserve list, just because he's still kind of a question mark to be back week one, maybe week two. You know, why would you use an IR spot on a guy who's really only going to miss a couple weeks, or expected to currently? So that's just one of their most contested position groups. And right now I really have no idea where they're going with that, because Richie James, Kendrick Bourne have both shown really well through preseason. They've gotten a ton of snaps. And then Jordan Matthews has kind of been, I really don't know what to expect. It's, you know, you've got me stumped on that one. I have no idea who they're going with for that sixth spot, which is what I'm assuming they keep. They could surprise and keep more. I'm just not sure.
Yeah, Trent Taylor with a broken foot. I heard Greg Olsen kind of struggled with that, but the aforementioned Julio Jones was able to come back from that as well. Do you think, you know, if you look at a Richie James and you think, well, you know, he's our kick returner, so he has to make the team. I mean, you could save a roster spot by saying, well, Deebo Samuel was one of the best in college football, but we don't want to risk him getting hurt on special teams. Do you think James has a little bit of a nod just because he can run back kicks?
I think so. And one of the things that the special teams coach, Richard Hightower, said is that Kyle Shanahan wants the best at every spot to play, no matter what their role on the offense is. And it just so happens that Richie James seems like right now the best returner. And he's not just getting those reps because he's not one of the starting guys. He's getting those reps because he's the one that's producing the most. And, you know, maybe if you put Deebo Samuel back there, he'd also be having some success. But right now, Richie James seems like their best kick returner and a decent receiver. So if he makes the roster, it'll be on that merit, the fact that he was the best kick returner the 49ers had. It's just whether or not they're willing to sacrifice a strong special teams for, you know, just keeping a guy they know is a little bit better at being an NFL receiver. It's just it's one of the probably the toughest cuts the 49ers have had to make since Shanahan and Lynch took over. They know that they're cutting guys that are immediately going to get picked up by another team and that they might see make plays on the field throughout the regular season. And, you know, that's when regrets come in, but that's you know, at least you know you're building a roster that's competitive at this point.
One of the great things about football, too, is you have undrafted guys who become pro ball players. And even in the draft, you think, wow, we hit on, you know, Solly Thomas and Reuben Foster. But then you look down at George Kittle. Everybody has to just nail a guy in the fourth or fifth round like that. And remember the last game of the season, he going back and forth with Kelsey, who was going to get the record. And we know that he didn't have pro bowlers throwing to him. So there's no doubt that if he's healthy, he is a pro bowl tight end. But, you know, you look at the backups. I kind of thought, you know, when Levine Toilolo came in, I thought, or Tololo, I guess, he was doing okay with the Lions last year. But they like Garrett Celek, but then he got hurt. They draft Caden Smith, also out of Stanford. But it looks like Ross Dwelly is the backup, and then Caden Smith is third string. Is that how it's going to go?
That's what it's looked like. And Ross Dwelly has been, you know, he's an undrafted guy that's kind of been biding his time, and he looks solid. He's shown that he can make some plays. He hasn't done a lot throughout the preseason, but throughout training camp, he's a pretty consistent, you know, he was good for about two or three catches of practice where he would just find an open space, and he's a decent enough athlete. You know, he's 6'5", 240. He can move, and he's a decent enough athlete. He's like a smart player. He knows where to sit in the zones and kind of just turn whatever he can out of nothing. So it's been surprising, but he's been solid. That, you know, having him there as the backup behind Kittle makes sense. And then you have Caden Smith, who has made a couple of plays this preseason, and he's just seemed solid. I mean, nothing. His training camp highlight was this kind of a big contested catch in the end zone where he kind of went up, turned around, caught the ball, and came down, and it was pretty impressive. But and then you have Garrett Celek, who really has had no chance with his back surgery that he had in the offseason. He's had no chance to kind of come in and compete for the role, which is unfortunate for how long he's been with the Niners and how reliable he's been is kind of that, you know, a blocking tight end slash, you know, tight end two, three, whatever you have it. So it looks like that it's Kittle, Dwelly, and Caden Smith going into the season. But, you know, Tyree Mayfield, he's an undrafted guy that's made some plays. He's an athlete. And you can tell when the way he moves. He might be in the mix. I'm just not sure. But I think if I had to pick, I would say it's definitely Kittle, Dwelly, and Caden Smith.
You know, I just saw a recent article in the Chronicle about Azeez Al-Shaair and the all-time tackler in the history of Florida Atlantic. But, you know, 6'2", 228, not diminutive, not fantastic size. But, you know, in today's NFL, people, they just kind of dive at your ankles. To have a linebacker, I mean, they had one in Chris Borland who could form tackle, and, of course, he quit after a year. But this guy now, you know, he's a little banged up. What are his chances of making the team, and would it be he'd have to make a mark on special teams?
I think he's got a good chance. And, you know, the same way you're looking at wide receivers is the same way that I'm looking at linebackers. You have your locks. You know, you have Quan Alexander, Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw, and then you have kind of Malcolm Smith, who seems like he's kind of worked himself into a spot where they keep him. The way his contract is kind of built, he restructured it, but he still has a lot of guaranteed money this year. So I think Malcolm Smith is probably still going to make the team if he's healthy. He's a good guy that you want at least getting on the field every now and then. He's not exactly what they signed him to be, but, you know, that's probably why they restructured him in the first place. And it seems like, you know, that he's worked his way into a spot where he can actually make the team. And it'll be as one of the bottom guys. And like you said, it'll be as a special teams guy. But he's just, you know, like you said, one of those undrafted guys that just works hard, and if you make plays consistently enough and you have the coaches talking about you, you have a chance. And to what you said, that's just one of my favorite parts about the NFL is when a guy can come in and be overlooked in the draft and make people regret that mistake. And I think he's got a good shot. I think he should be right there at the bottom of that depth chart and in the mix to make the roster for sure.
Final question about Nick Bosa, and you know, people say, maybe he's a tin man. His last injury was, it could have happened to anyone. He just, you know, you're in a pile and you're going to get rolled over or whatever, it's going to happen. But this was the pick that they had to make. He couldn't, you know, John Lynch couldn't be known as the guy that passed on him. He was going to be the number one overall pick for sure until the Kyler Murray revolution began. When he's sitting there at two, that's the guy you have to take. Now, with that being said, the injury, his hammy, what happened to him as last year with the Buckeyes, week one, is it looking 50-50? Because for me, a guy like that, an investment like that, as much as you want to play him, you do not want to put him out there unless he's 100%.
Right, 100%. I'm right there with you. I don't want to throw too many percentages around because then we're going to get confused with what people think his likelihood of playing is. But I would definitely say both is 50-50. And if anything, I would say it's less than 50-50 in leaning towards he doesn't play for the fact that if, well, you know, let's say it's a playoff game, you know, who knows? It would be a situation where he would play. But since it's week one, they have the whole season looking like Dee Ford's going to be out there and they're just playing it cautious with him. And I think they're going to do the same with Bosa. They're just going to be cautious with him. And he looked really, really good in training camp. And I'm not a hyperbole guy. I try to keep things as level as I can, especially because when it comes to a rookie, it's all about stacking games together. You can't look good one day and then look mediocre the next day. It's about continually looking good. And he was exactly what you'd expect from a number two pick. And he is coming with some injury risk. You know, he tore his ACL as a senior in high school. And then he had that core injury as a junior at Ohio State. So it's, you know, that's two season ending injuries in 4 years, essentially. But at the same time, a guy that has that injury does not maintain that kind of draft position without having the skill set that he has. He was basically a pro just waiting to come out of college. And that's how he came out in training camp. I mean, you have a guy like Joe Staley, you know, pulling you aside at the end of practice to offer you a little praise and then ask for a little advice. You know, what are you seeing here? What are you doing? You're doing something right. And Nick Bosa has had one of the best training camps of any rookie I've ever seen. And I think it is 100% the play to take it cautious, even if that means sitting week two, which everybody wants to see Bosa get out there. But even if that means sitting week two, just so when he steps out there, he is 100%, you know, for the first home game back at Levi Stadium, the season opener there. I think that's the play. Like, just give the guy, you know, he's always going to, you know, have a little bit of injury issues. One, it's a super physical position. But two, he's just dealt with injuries. And so has his brother. And so did his dad. So it's just a matter of kind of playing that, knowing it's there, and just doing what you can to mitigate it. And I think with a guy like Bosa, he's going to have an immediate impact on the field. And especially at a position like pass rusher where there's ripple effects going through the defense, I think that they'll say he's 50-50 to play week one, but I would be surprised if he does. And I wouldn't be surprised if they just hold off on playing him until they come back to Levi Stadium on week three.
Yeah, well, we know his brother missed his first four games as a rook because the Spanos family was being ridiculous with him, I thought, and he still was rookie of the year. So patience is a virtue. We've been speaking, courtesy of the Dialpad guest line, with Rob Lauder, covering the 49ers for Niners Nation, SB Nation. Check him out on Twitter at Rob_Lauder, LOWDER. Rob, great stuff, man. Thanks for your time and your insights, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me on, and we'll do it again.
All right, good stuff. And the lines are open. This next segment is about y'alls and your calls. Get in the queue. We'll talk to you. 888-957-9570. Are you heading out to the Coliseum? The parking lot is filling up. A's fans, Giants fans, cats living with dogs. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle.
Es verdad, mis amigos. Come on, everybody.
Soy el fuego que arde tu piel. Soy el agua que mata tu sed. El castillo, la torre, yo soy. La espada que guarda el caldo. Tu la lees que respiro yo.
All right, I'll shut up now. We're talking sports. It doesn't sound like it. 95.7 The Game. Rick Tittle with you. Are you in the parking lot right now at the Coliseum? Give me a call. I want you to give me a call right now.
Dude, Tittle just said to call him up.
888-957-9570. Once again, 888-957-9570. This is a big night, Bay Area. Bumgarner at the Coliseum. The Giants aren't dead yet, and the A's are a playoff team. It matters. The All-Star Game. This time, it matters. Let's go to Brian in Pleasanton. You're on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, hey, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually hoping to continue the international flavor you just provided us by throwing out a little soccer. Are we cool with that?
Get it in quick, baby.
Okay. Well, quick fan since day one. Going to go to the game tonight with my fiance. Just wondering if you think this is a must-win tonight, and with the attacking attack in general stall in the last couple games and a couple losses in a row, how are we going to fix that? Big Tottenham fan as well, so shout out to them and to you, and I'll take your answer off the air.
All right, real quick. Well, the good thing is you're going to Avaya Stadium, which is awesome. It's funny, when they built it, they actually were going to point the open horseshoe towards the train tracks. And that neighborhood on the other side of the track said, it's going to be too loud. So luckily they turned it and they faced it towards the airport. Now you get this like video game kind of thing where you see planes landing. The largest outdoor bar in America. But yeah, you got Vancouver coming in. Listen, the fact that the Quakes are a playoff team right now is pretty cool, and I like the fact that Matias Almeida, his message is finally getting through. It's not a must-win at this point, but to keep your playoff spot, it would be nice. You got to win at home and draw on the road, and next thing you know, you'll be a champion. Thanks for the call. 831, Rick, what is the song you're singing? That's the theme song to Narcos. 510 says, just drove by the Coliseum, and it is packed. 925 says, wo ist mein Volkswagen? Brauchen Sie Hilfe? Grede aus und Esten Ecke? Es ist da. Rick, the name in Wong sounds like the vowel in hot and pop. Yes, that's what I was saying, Jimmy. Wong, spelled Wang. Yes. All right, also... on the text line here, Rick, why is it that Colin Kaepernick is still not being signed? You know, this is the thing. Every year, every day, I should say, that goes by, he becomes more and more of a memory as a player. And, you know, you look at the stats on his final season, and they blow away most quarterback stats. You know, you can say he's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not. He'll tell you that himself. So the talent isn't an issue. He can't read defenses. Shut up. Look at the numbers. Look at the wins. Did you not see the Super Bowl? He can't read defenses. All right, yeah, he's terrible, right? No. But I kind of look at it. There are some players that don't get any work because they're a team distraction. Like Barry Bonds, right? He led Major League Baseball in on-base percentage his last year. The next year, 30 teams passed. Why would you not want the guy that led baseball in on-base percentage, especially if you're a sabermetrics goober? Because he's a distraction to your team. You don't want to deal with him. He comes in with a rep as a horse's ass, and then everyone's going to talk about roids, and he's not going to be in the team picture. That's a team distraction. But unfortunately for Cap, he is viewed now as a league distraction. I wonder if there's like this memo that went out, and it's like, please don't sign him. He'll kneel, and then our ratings will go, when the ratings go down. So I have a feeling, like, if you sign Barry Bonds, other teams will be like, good luck with him. But any team that signs Kaepernick, the other 31 teams will go, what are you doing? Now our ratings are going to go down. So they're all scared, and money rules the day, and it always has, and it always will. Something that's heartwarming. That money is always going to rule the day. Rick, Jimmy Garoppolo will just get hurt. He's too injury prone. Well, a lot of times you just need to be lucky, okay? Like you look at Jason Verrett out of Fairfield. The Niners are taking another chance on him. 3 years in a row, he had a season-ending injury. Now, is that because he's injury prone? I think you're injury prone when two ways. Either you're a giant klutz and you know who you are and you can't help it. That's the way the good Lord made you. You're a klutz. The other way is if you fall down and your kneecaps shatter on some little innocuous play, like why would that make your kneecap shatter? Well, then maybe you have bones more brittle than other people. I don't know. But when you do your ACL, when you're planting to make a cut, that's just, you know, that's some bad luck. And it happens to everybody. I don't think it's because he's injury prone. You know, look at Cal Ripken Jr., baseball's Iron Man. Do you think he didn't have injuries that were barking? Do you think he didn't have bumps and bruises and flip-flop fumbles all over his body and big sores? Sure he did. He's playing 162 games. John Miller said when he was the Orioles announcer, and what was he there, 10 years? He never did a game in 10 years or whatever it was where Cal Ripken Jr. was not the starting shortstop. Think about that. That's pretty cool. But you know what else? And I'll say this about Cal Ripken Jr., and I'll say it like Seinfeld. He was lucky! He was lucky! He was lucky he didn't get hurt. He could have been, and he's, you know, at a pivot point, too. He's the shortstop, and he's turning two. Somebody could have come in and hit him with his cleats right in his nether regions or something. I mean, you got to be a little bit lucky, too. He was lucky! Oh, that's my last Seinfeld bit. 888-957-9570. Rick, what is your home phone number? Here it is. Just text me. It's my cell phone. It's 510-2-31. Once again, 510-2-1. Just send me a text. Probably dumb to say that on the radio in the Fifth Market, but I'm being brave, and there it is. Rick, did the Raiders give up too much for Antonio Brown? Well, yes, if he never plays. Otherwise, it's a no-brainer for a 3 and a 5 for Antonio Brown. Talent-wise, you're getting a Hall of Fame talent. Now, can be a little bit of a turkey, although I am on his side in the second part of Helmet Gate. The first part of Helmet Gate, I wanted him to just shut up and get a new helmet. But when the NFL came to him and said, dude, you're shut air advantage, it passed all the tests. It's just more than 10 years old. And that's a rule. It's a stupid rule, but that's a rule. Otherwise, it would be cool. It passed. It's just 10 years old. So he finds one made in 2014. He found one. He's got another 5 years on that one. And the NFL said, nah, it didn't pass. Now I think they're screwing with him. I mean, I really do. As I said, I was not on Antonio Brown's side the first time. It's like, would you just shut up and get a new helmet like everybody else? But then he finds the helmet. Look, I did what you said. And I'm like, okay, cool. Everybody wins. And then the NFL says, that one's not approved. So they switched on him. Now I'm on his side. I didn't think I would be. But now I'm on his side. But no, they didn't give up too much. Think of it this way. In comparison, and I know it's apples and plantains, but if you have a 3 and a 5 for a Hall of Fame talent like Antonio Brown, the only guy to have 6 straight seasons of 1,000 yards receiving, going for 7, and then you think about what Miami gave up for Josh Rosen, who hasn't done jack diddly squat, they gave up a 2 and a 5, and now he's not even going to start. It's going to be Fitzpatrick. So a 3 and a 5 for Brown, or a 2 and a 5 for Rosen. So, no, they did not give up too much. Just think about if Antonio Brown was a good soldier and said, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, and did everything. I mean, you would have had to give up at least 2 ones, at least, to get a guy like that. By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, radio.com sports station. Rick Tittle with you for another hour. Coming up here in about 15 minutes. We will have Eric Crocker. He'll come in. He's a former NFL player. We'll talk a little football with him. But as I said, the parking lot at the Coliseum, if you're there, you're on your way. A's fan, Giants fan, baseball fan. That's another thing, too. If you've ever been somewhere, you're in some other city, other country, and you want to check out the local sporting event, you know, it's a cool thing culturally. If you're in town right now, and look, August is the European travel month. everywhere you go in San Francisco at this time, Sausalito, wherever, it's packed with Europeans. This is their travel month. If you're in town from La Belle France, not only are you getting a baseball game, but you're going to get A's, Giants. That's pretty cool. I kind of thought that a few years ago. I was in New York and I was in Brooklyn and it was the Knicks at the Nets. And I'm like, oh, the New York Derby. Oh, this is going to be a blood feud. Went in there, half full, both teams stunk. You know what it really reminded me of? It reminded me of being a Warrior fan for decades. I'm like, oh yeah, this is what I sat through, this garbage. But this is a cool thing to check out. These aren't two garbage teams. These are teams, putting the emphasis on the second syllable. These are two teams that are fighting. The A's are, not P-H-I-T, and I'm glad those necklaces and wrist things went away.
There's magnets that keep the vampires away, and there's garlic, I think.
But you got the A's, they're a playoff team, and you got the Giants. Is this thing on? And you got the Giants who are fighting for their playoff lives. Remember, I was the guy who said sell everyone because it's not their year. It's very easy for me to say it's not my team. I'm not in charge. I'm not signing the paychecks. But I just thought, like, it ain't going to happen. Cash it in. Well, there's 5 weeks left. The Giants want to make a move. They have to do it tonight. They have to win these two, not even split, because they're just back where you started from yesterday. They have to win these two games against the A's, and then they can build on it. This is the hottest team in the last 9 weeks, hotter even than the Metsies or anybody else, the A's. They just had two of the three super teams. If you don't know the super teams, it's the Dodgers, the Astros, and the Yankees. You just had the two AL super teams come into Oakland for seven games, and the A's won six. Six, I tell you. And the Astros were like, what in the hell happened? Because usually the Astros, they knock around the A's like a cat with a mouse. Ha ha, look at them trying to get away. That's basically what they do. So this is a big deal going on right now. And if you look at it on paper, as I said, you know, hey, listen, man, it's Bumgarner versus Bassett. The A's don't have a chance. Well, if you think about it, when their careers are over, you're going to say, well, yeah, Bumgarner's the more accomplished guy, one of the biggest playoff heroes of all time in the World Series in 2014 against Kansas City. Think about Game 7. Think about the two times they were in a wild card, both at Pittsburgh, both times Bumgarner with a shutout. Complete game shutout. That's redundant. Both times. And Chris Bassett, who is he? He was a guy thrown in the last name in the Samardzija trade, and he's been up and down and up and down. Well, he's back, baby. He's back, and not only is he back, but his record on the year, he's got better numbers than Bum. Now, remember, you're a pitcher. It's a team stat, wins and losses. It just is. But still, Bassett is 9-5 with a 3.61. Bumgarner is 8-8 with a 3.72. Now, Bumgarner did beat the A's that first game in San Francisco. I went to the second one last week, and that was when Tyler Beede had a good first inning, and then Matt Chapman hit a home run off him, and then he started bouncing everything. He kind of reminds me of a young Gio Gonzalez. When Gio Gonzalez, he would be amazing, but he'd get traffic, and then he'd throw over to first base six times in a row, and I'm like, ah, these base runners are in his head. Gots to get out of the head. But this is the other thing about Bumgarner that you might not know. He's had five starts at the Oakland Coliseum, which is a very pitcher-friendly park. They have big, huge tracts of land, and they have huge pastures of foul ground. And yet, his ERA there in the five starts is a 6.30. That's not good. It's not a disaster, but it's certainly bad. And then you look at how Bassett has been pitching lately and going through teams like New York and Houston. His last four starts, not only is he 2-0, he has a 1.80, and he's even good going back even before that a little bit. So it's interesting. And you think about, you know, there was no KD outside of a pinch hit late in that second game. That was the game where Melvin almost threw it away by putting in Soria when he actually got something out of Homer Bailey. But the Giants got four that inning. It's like, yikes. But, you know, KD will get to play, and maybe the Giants are liking it. KD's been so bad lately, maybe the Giants don't mind seeing him. I actually had somebody call me last night saying, two guys actually called me. One guy said, cut him. Another guy said, bench him. Look, has he been very poor lately? Yes. But to me, he doesn't have anything to prove outside of he can get out of this slump. And the only way you get out of this, it's like putting somebody in debtor's prison. In England, other countries, debtor's prison. In other words, you owe me £200. Go to jail. How am I supposed to pay it back if I'm in jail? Say it like Seinfeld, if I'm in jail. But Farhan was saying that he's going to use Slater maybe in the infield and then get some DH out of some Yaz, some Pilar. I think Dickerson's probably going to be the guy. Why isn't Bochy saying that? Well, we know who's in charge. Do we not? And KD, it's Melvin said that it is weighing on him. It hurts him. I remember when KD, when he first came to the A's, and I thought he went to the Nets. We're talking about Chris Davis here, not Kevin Durant. But when he first came to the A's, he had, you know how his other KD, Kevin Durant, he cared very much what strangers thought about him on the anonymity of social media. Well, somebody, I remember, said something that was a little bit insultory or pejorative to Chris Davis. And Chris Davis sent a handwritten note. And I remember we all got to see it. And it was kind of funny because he said one of his lines was, our struggle as baseball players is sometimes divine. Look, he's a different kind of cat, but I love that cat. And I think
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.